You and I back together again, chatting it up Tuesday style, the 17th of December, 2024, right here on Connecticut Today. I open the show with some recorded comments on MSNBC from Connecticut Democratic Senator Chris Murphy on what he still sees as a continued threat from President-elect Donald Trump. Key question here is, did Senator Murphy go too far with this again? We spoke to CBS News political reporter Libby Cathy from West Palm Beach, Florida, on the continued Trump transition, and Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio talked about the possibility of billions of dollars in state tax credits being reexamined in the coming General Assembly session.
All right, you know, when somebody says something and you sit back, and a guy like me who kind of soaks all this stuff in, and you sit back and you say, huh, what? You know, I just feel I have to point this out. Now, what am I talking about here? Well, now, you know, ever since Mr. Trump was, to the chagrin of many and to the joy of others, reelected or elected again after another term, his first term, when he was elected last month on November the 5th. You know, a lot of people were duly upset with that. A lot of people were turning cartwheels over that. So, you know, in scenario here, we have something where people have been just told, all right, calm down. Let's not act like this is the end of the world. And even people on the Democratic side are, you know, saying, well, this is what we have to deal with, and you may not like it, or you may like it, or whatever. But I got to tell you, there are still some people, and sadly, one of them, and I do mean sadly, because I'm going to play something for you, and you're going to sit back and go like, what, hey, huh? Chris Murphy, our illustrious junior U.S. Senate member, Democrat from Connecticut, who obviously has his eyes, and there's nothing wrong with that, who has his eyes you know, focused on some other things, and that's fine. If Vice President Harris had won, you know, there was rumors that Chris Murphy was on the short list for Secretary of State, whatever, that's neither here nor there. But he's now being hailed as one of these people to, you know, lead the Democratic Party out of the wilderness, and whatever. That's not the issue. That's not the issue. Look, whenever, like somebody said to me the other day, whenever a party loses something, right, they do this kind of self-assessment. Why did we lose? Did we lose in an honorable way? Were there other things we could have done? Well, that's fine. But for some reason, Chris Murphy is still acting like this is the end of the world. And I don't say that lightly. I have about a two-minute segment of audio I'm going to play for you on the other side of the break. And this is Chris Murphy, I guess, earlier today or yesterday, talking with Jen Psaki on MSNBC about how this, to him, certainly looks like the end of the world. Where there are others saying, well, listen, let's see what happens here. But for some reason, and he may be right, but the hysteria here, which didn't work on Election Day, November 5th, when the hysteria didn't work, I guess some people are clinging to it. I don't know. So we're going to take a little step out here, stretch our legs, come back. And when we do, I've got about a two and a half minute segment of audio here from Chris Murphy. Now, I don't besmirch Senator Murphy for winning re-election again. He won. He got the most votes. That's fine. But sometimes you hear stuff and you say, well, is this straining from opinion to just unfounded fear? And there are people who are not going to let the unfounded fear let it go. Now, they may be right in the end. I'm not saying that. But trust me, stay with me here. By the way, if you want to chime in on this, you can when you hear it. At 203-333-9422, 333-WICC, and ask yourself. Now, we don't hear this kind of stuff from Dick Blumenthal. We generally don't hear it from Jim Himes. We generally don't hear it from Johanna Hayes or from Rosa DeLauro or from John Larson or from Joe Courtney out in submarine land out there in the eastern part of the state. But there seems to be, oh, and by the way, this is only Chris Murphy part one. I've got part two coming up. And again, I don't besmirch Mr. Murphy for winning what he won, but some of the stuff he says, and some of the stuff he says I agree with, but some of the stuff over the past few days is just mind-boggling. And I'll give you mind-boggling part one when we come back right after this. So apparently, Chris Murphy thinks it's the end of the world that Donald Trump was elected. Now, it may be, or I should say elected again, I don't think so. Listen to this. Now, again, I understand Senator Murphy was reelected. Good on him. Another 6 years maybe in the Senate. Who knows between now and then? Would he leave for another appointment if there was a Democrat elected again in 2028? I mean, who knows? Who knows? But having said that, can we just stop, Senator, with all due respect, can we please just stop this whole the world is ending thing because of Donald Trump? Because until you have evidence that the world is ending, you probably shouldn't say stuff like this.
I think this is a red alert moment. And I know we all want to be a little careful about not sort of setting the conversation on fire even before Trump has been sworn in. But I think the narrative that you just laid out is really, really important. There are not just two things in this world, democracies and dictatorships. There are all sorts of countries in this world that occupy a gray zone in between a democracy where you regularly have different political parties and different leaders changing exchanging power, and dictatorships where only one person, one party is in control. There are lots of places that still have elections, but the opposition is muted, is too weak to ever win. Oh. And so people get to vote, but the same people hold on to power decade after decade.
Listen to this.
The way that happens is pretty routine. The press stops telling the true story. People are punished for organizing political opposition. And all of that seems to be a priority for Donald Trump when he takes the White House.
Dear
and you
God.
See it already happening. Elon Musk, because he's got lots of political interests, has already essentially folded his operation into the White House. Your parent company has decided that owns MSNBC has decided to sell MSNBC, likely because it just doesn't want to run afoul of Donald Trump. Jeff Bezos instructed his papers not to make endorsements because his bread is buttered in part by government contracts that Donald Trump will be in charge of. You're already seeing people with power in this country, people who own the information highways, starting to cower, starting to step aside. And when a true real story can't be told about people in power, what that does is rob agency from voters, but also from the political opposition. Listen, I hope that does not happen starting on January 20th, but I think you were very right to lay out the real possibility that we are in for a very difficult and dangerous assault on the free press and open democracy.
Oh, my God, stop. Oh, how irresponsible, honestly. Now, he did all that because Jen Psaki, she was aghast. Jen Psaki was aghast that Donald Trump was putting pressure on certain members of his party to affirm the nominations of Tulsi Gabbard, RFK Jr., Pete Hegseth, like the Democrats never do that. Oh, but this is different. And look, with all due respect to Senator Murphy, he just said some patently false things in there. Now, why might NBC be sold? Because since Trump was elected, Senator, with all due respect, MSNBC's ratings suck. MSNBC and CNN are getting hammered by, like, the Food Network. And NBC may be losing sales because of this, Senator. It's commercial business. So to sit there and say, well, your company, Jen, is quivering in fear because they may sell NBC. Well, they may sell MSNBC because the ratings suck. What can I tell you? And you notice how the narrative is now with Chris Murphy, and I had to play this, folks, because it's just, it's laughable. Remember that democracy was on the ballot in this election. Now that he won, and he won the Electoral College, and he ended up winning the popular vote, now Chris Murphy is like, well, you know, there's sometimes a gray area. Wait a minute, Senator. With all due respect, sir, you weren't talking gray areas a bunch of weeks ago. No, it was going to be the end of it. Was going to be like War of the Worlds. It was going to be like Professor Pearson in Grover's Mill, New Jersey. That's an old radio reference there, by the way. But no. Oh, man, he got to stop. Look, thank God you've got liberals like John Fetterman, the senator from Pennsylvania, Van Jones from CNN, other people saying, hey, Trump won because our candidate sucked. She was horrible and the campaign was a $1 billion waste of money. But Chris Murphy, ostensibly representing everybody in this state, is talking about, well, journalism is cowering in fear. And no, Senator, Jeff Bezos isn't cowering in fear. You know why? Jeff Bezos says, well, wait a minute. I won't have one conservative person subscribing to my newspaper because of the editorial stance. Maybe it's a business decision, too. Oh, my God. Oh, and by the way, coming up later on, today's freakout, and Eric in Fairfield, hang on, we'll get right to you. The freak out today is the Dems still want to get rid of. Now, they know this is never going to happen. They want to get rid of the Electoral College. And you're saying to yourself, I'm reading the story going, well, why do you want to do that? Because Trump won the popular vote as well. Oh, they have a new twisted T logic here. And we are back with you right here on a Tuesday edition of Connecticut Today, right here, WICC 600 AM, 95.9 FM. Joining us right now, CBS News political correspondent, reporter Libby Cathy, as we give you the latest on the Trump transition. Libby, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
Good to be with you, Paul, from a windy but warm West Palm Beach.
I was going to say, I've talking now to you and your other CBS folks down there. There are worse places to be in the middle of December, aren't there?
Absolutely. There are worse places to be. I've had worse assignments, so I can't complain too much.
Yeah, two things let's touch on. First of all, coming down to the home stretch here on some of the more controversial appointees or nominees of Mr. Trump, of course, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Pete Hegseth, and others. What's the latest you're hearing generally and also from the Trump campaign, Libby? What are they telling you?
Well, as we speak, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. back on Capitol Hill right now. Same with Pete Hegseth, Tulsi Gabbard, also expected on the Hill this week. Meeting with senators down to the last minute, down until everyone goes home for the holidays. They'll be all gone come Friday. But really, the Trump campaign and Trump himself being bullish on these nominees, on these picks, really standing by them, especially after we saw, you know, Matt Gaetz withdraw his nomination for attorney general. There were some questions if Pete Hegseth, for instance, might do the same amid those allegations of sexual misconduct, financial misconduct, allegations may have a drinking problem. But Trump really standing by his men here, and in some cases his women, and letting those picks meet with senators on Capitol Hill. And while his team, you know, does the rounds on cable news defending them, and Trump himself weighing in. I mean, yesterday at Mar-a-Lago, we heard him take questions from reporters, and he said those senators who don't support his picks, well, they need to be ready to potentially be primaried come next election. So Trump bullish on his picks. The team are feeling good about the chances of all those picks being confirmed, even the controversial ones, like you say, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., not only among Democrats questioning him on vaccines, for instance, but Republicans questioning his views on abortion since he was a Democrat before. But again, they think that they will be confirmed once these surely volatile confirmation hearings start next year.
And the fascinating thing here, Libby, for folks like you and I who watch this for a living, people like RFK Jr., Pete Hegseth, and even Tulsi Gabbard, they're not the traditional, really right-leaning nominees you get from Republicans in the past. I mean, they do have some support, even in some far progressive and even Democratic circles. So this, to me, is fascinating, that aspect of it.
Absolutely. And I think the common denominator, even though, yes, you know, Tulsi Gabbard, for instance, also a former Democrat, the common denominator in all these picks is loyalty to Trump. Maybe they, you know, some Pete Hegseth, for instance, doesn't have that traditional government experience, but Trump is finding those who are loyal to him and two will be good talkers or good on TV. He's seen them before. Many of them have joined them on stage at his rallies. So that is the experience that he's putting forth. And of course, the Trump transition team would also say that all of these nominees are qualified for their positions. Mm-hmm. That's their job to argue that. But we'll see if all those senators, Republican senators, get on board come January.
And finally, you talked about the news conference. You know, Mr. Trump has been pretty quiet since he won his election. A lot of people are pointing to his new chief of staff, kind of keeping the communications down, keeping him as best she can away from social media. So yesterday carried, I guess, Libby, a lot of weight. I saw, hey, he's speaking. What do you think the shakeout was from all of that?
Yeah, honestly, making a lot of headlines over there, Paul. And our Caitlin Huey Burns was over there asking some of those questions, breaking some of the news. Quickly, just to tick through, we talked a little bit about vaccines. He did kind of wade into questioning that vaccine science, saying that our Robert F. Kennedy Jr., he wants him to go and report back. But he also stopped short of the polio vaccine, saying that he would make sure the polio vaccine is protected, mm-hmm. saying that he knows people, for instance, Senator Mitch McConnell, who has benefited from that. Ticking through a couple other things, he floated pardoning New York Mayor Eric Adams. He kind of downplayed the chances for his daughter-in-law, Laura Trump, to become the next senator of Florida, with Marco Rubio vacating his Senate seat. He also threatened more lawsuits on the media. We saw one of those today against the Des Moines Register. He talked about those foreign leaders coming for Inauguration Day come January 20th, and also criticized Biden's response to those drones in New Jersey. So really touched on a little bit of everything yesterday. And in the meantime, we'll just have to monitor the questions we still have on Truth Social, is where we're getting our news from the former president and now president-elect, Paul.
In West Palm Beach, watching the Trump transition, Libby Cathy, CBS News. Libby, thanks. Be safe, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Stay warm.
Megan Portfolio joins us for every Tuesday slot. She of the Hartford Portfolio blog of the Yankee Institute. Megan, are there any drones up by where you are in beautiful central Connecticut?
Oh, my God. It's actually kind of funny you say that, because I've been slightly obsessed with it that I even dreamed about them last night.
Oh, my God. Stop.
It started off as a joke where I was making up conspiracy theories for fun. Yeah. But then I started thinking about them, and it was driving me crazy. And now I'm dreaming about these damn drones.
You're dreaming about drones. Jeez. And don't
it makes
you
me not want to go in my hot tub at night.
Well, no, he's fine. Don't worry. Listen, what's the worst thing that can happen? Don't worry about it. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. So you have a very interesting piece at the Hartford Portfolio blog, and this really interests me because we hear about tax credits here, and we'll do tax credits for this and tax credits for an EV and tax credits for movie and TV shoots, but they do add up, and I guess now, which is good, I think, Megan, you wrote that there's going to be kind of this bipartisan commission that's going to go over, what, these credits to the tune of $10 billion we give out?
Oh, yes. Oh, I must have been like watching the holiday movie phase, because I was in a good mood. And so I actually wrote something that's okay. Really positive about the government, which is not usually my writing style.
No.
But yeah, so we dole out, you know, $10 billion just in the tax credits to different businesses and people. This doesn't include property. It's just regular tax credits.
Yeah.
And so a group... it was assigned to start, I think, in the summer. It was in one of, it was like buried in one of the bills mm-hmm. per use.
Yeah.
But they finally got around to meeting. And yeah, they actually want to look at these different tax credits that we hand out.
Yeah.
And gee, figure out, are they working? Are they doing what they were intended to do? Because, you know, they pass these laws like, oh, I'm not picking on an industry or anything, but like a data center wants to open up. Oh,
okay.
Let's give them a tax credit.
Yeah.
And then it just like they forget about it. Mm. And it's on the books for years on end. And there's costs associated with having these things on the books, not just the, like, you know, what you'd think about, like, you know, tax revenue that we're not collecting. But these people in the government, they sit there and put reports and reports and reports together. Because you know how it works in the legislature. You can't get your bill passed. You do a report or a study.
Yeah.
Someone actually has to do those studies. And it's time, and it takes time away from doing other things. So there is costs associated with this. So these things are on the books. No one's paying attention. No one's paying attention to see if it's like driving the behavior that it's intending to drive. But now they're going to do it. Now they're going to, they have a whole commission set up. It's bipartisan. Everyone seemed to be all on the same page. It was Republicans and Democrats. And I was really excited. They haven't really picked anything that they want to eliminate or look at. The only thing they did actually talk about was the film tax credit, which I hate the film. I'll just be honest. I hate the film tax credit.
Yeah, but
I'm sorry to your listeners. Who
no,
love it, but
I know. I know. But yeah. And I've talked about it with other people on this show, and they said a lot of times, and this has been debated back and forth, Megan, you know this, monetarily it might not make a lot of sense, but they like it because, oh my God, they shot that movie in my town last week and it's on Lifetime now. You know what I mean? It's kind of one of these feel-good things. Oh, let's go to Connecticut. It's such a wonderful place. Well, they're coming here because they save a lot in taxes. So, yeah, I understand that.
But what people aren't getting is they're saving money in taxes, but they have to make up that revenue somewhere.
Yeah,
I hate calling it revenue.
Yeah.
But they call it revenue. So they have to make it up. So we're handing out, you know, hundreds of million dollars to film some Hallmark movie up here. Well, that's going to have to be taxed somewhere else.
Aren't they all the same, too? These, and God bless. And my son is in the entertainment business. He does this stuff on Broadway. But isn't every Hallmark movie or Lifetime movie the same?
I mean, they're fine. I mean, I enjoy, you know, a little more violence in my
films. Yes. Yes. The perfect.
A little more action. Yeah. I'm more of like a diehard Christmas
Well, me
person.
Too. See, people, I tell people in the years of doing this show, you know, the perfect movie for Paul is, you know, gunfights, stuff blowing up, and gratuitous skin, and I'm good. But no, but seriously, back to what you were saying to wrap this up, it's $10 billion a year. So even if we only got rid of or eliminated $1 billion of the $10 billion, I mean, think what we could do, and think of how happy some of these nonprofits would be.
Yeah,
Megan,
we wouldn't have to touch our guardrails.
With an extra $1 billion to spend. Think about that.
I have a limited time with you, so I can't go through a lot of it. But I mean, there was one tax. It was a cigar tax cap. It caps it at 50 cents per cigar.
Yeah.
That's $11 million.
Wow.
And that benefits 300 people. So they do this report every other year. It's
really?
Tax expenditure report.
Yeah.
I know it sounds weird, tax expenditure. That's just like a fancy way of saying, you know, like tax credit. Tax loophole, I don't really like that word because it's not really a loophole because the government's telling us we can do it. So we're just following the law.
Yeah.
The loophole sounds shady. But it's benefiting 300 people. I mean, is that really a necessity? I mean, that's $11 million right there. So there is a lot of things that they can look at, and I'm sure would be great ideas to maybe just get rid of altogether. And, but then comes the problem, are they going to have the guts to do it? Because then the 300 people that benefit from the cigar tax are going to call up their lawmakers.
Well, sure.
And then they get scared, and then nothing's going to change. But I'm very, very positive on this group.
Good.
I'm going to be watching them with a close eye. And I hopefully they can come up with some stuff.
Uh-huh.
Because if I had my way, the government wouldn't even be involved in any of this nonsense because they're picking winners and losers. But we've created this mess, and you can't just like walk in and like take a magic wand and get rid of all of them because we're driving people's behaviors. And if we start, you know, getting rid of things and not strategic about it, you know, someone has to pay somewhere, and we don't want to have it have the reverse effect and driving the behavior the other way where we're actually losing money or where our businesses are going to have to make up for it somehow and passing it on to the consumer. So, I mean, it's not going to be an easy job for this task group, but they all sounded very excited about it.
Oh,
and
good.
They were all, you know, and they understand there is an issue. And if the best, you know, even if they just came out of this working group saying, let's put a sunset date on all of this stuff where we examine it and look at it. Do we want to continue with it? Is it working? Is it not working? I would be happy if they just came out with that and we had a sunset on all of these.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with just looking at it. So we'll leave
Not
it there.
All.
I'm off next week, so you have a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and all that. And
I'll miss you.
And do me a favor, stop dreaming about drones, okay, please?
I'm going to try tonight. I really am, but I don't need them in my dreams.
Whatever chemicals or liquid or otherwise are needed, just do it, all right?
I need to dream up ways of, like, watching the government and making sure they're doing the right things for the people. That's what I need to be dreaming about.
Dear God, stop. Megan, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Thanks.
Merry Christmas.
Okay, Megan, thanks. You too. Take care. There you go.